Hello and welcome to Away, Indigenous art and culture on ABC Radio National. I'm Daniel Browning. It's great to have your company. Today on the program, a wide-ranging conversation with Sally Morgan. An artist and academic, she's best known as the author of My Place, a memoir about her search for identity, first published in 1987. My Place has been called an Australian classic. It's even taught in schools. But over the years, Sally Morgan has copped her fair share of criticism for not being Aboriginal enough and for not being literary enough. Then in 2004, allegations were aired on Channel 9's Sunday program that she'd fabricated claims about her family history. We get on to those questions a bit later. Over the past few years, Sally Morgan's emerged as an environmental warrior, trying to save rock art sites in the Pilbara threatened by mining. As well as continuing to paint and illustrate, she's also edited a series of anthologies. Today, among other things, we talk about the flourishing of Aboriginal oral history since My Place was first published, and the values she wants to pass on to future generations of her own family. You'll also hear excerpts from a dramatisation of My Place.
After much thought, I decided that our best course was to return to Nan and Arthur's birthplace, Corunna Downs. When I approached Nan about the idea of going up north, she was disgusted. "You're like your mother. You like to throw away money. All you'll be looking at is dirt, dirt and scrub." I ignored her and said, "Why don't you come with me? You might meet some of your old mates up there." Mum said wistfully, "I've always had a hankering to go up north."
I couldn't understand why my mother hadn't been to visit me. I thought perhaps they hadn't told her I was sick. She told me later that she couldn't come at night because of curfew, which prevented Aboriginal people travelling after dark. It was hard for her, and hard for me too. Even when I was sick, I belonged to the Native Welfare Department. I wasn't even allowed to have comfort of my own mother.
My mother was small and pretty. Well, she was very young when she had me. I was her first child. Then she had Lily by my Aboriginal father. Later there was Daisy. She was my only sister who shares with me the same parents. I was a good deal older than her when they took me away to the mission. She was only a babe in arms then.
I must have been about 14 or 15 when they took me from Corunna. First day in Perth, I had to tidy the garden, pick up the leaves and sweep the veranda. All the time I kept wondering when they were going to send me to school. I saw some white kids going to school, but not me. I never asked them why they didn't send me. I was too ashamed. Funny how I was the only half-caste they took with them from Corunna. Drake Brockman left the others and took me. Maybe Howden took me because I was his daughter. I don't know.
Well, I guess congratulations is due, Sally Morgan. It's the 21st anniversary of the first publication date for your book, My Place. How are you feeling about this? It's a book that's been described as a milestone and a classic. How are you feeling 21 years on?
Tired? No, look, really happy, and I think amazed by the success that the book's had. I think what means the most to me personally and my family is the fact that it's encouraged other people to tell their own stories. And we've had sort of like quite a few letters from other Aboriginal families where people have after reading the book, decided to try and track down their own families and reunite with them. And I think things like that have meant a tremendous amount to me and to my mum especially.
Yeah, because your mum Gladys, and I guess the way that you coax the story out of your mum and your nan, who's also a very big personality in my place,
yes,
the way that you coax that story out is also part of the story of my place, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Well, you know, when you look back over the histories of many of our families, it's so hard to talk about the past, to feel comfortable sharing it, to talk about things that happened to you personally. I think all of us as individuals and families have so many layers of grief and sadness there that we have to find ways to come to terms with, and that was certainly one of the challenges in my family, and it continues to be a little bit like that because, I mean, my mum's 80 now and she still has memories coming to her that she'd repressed from the past that come up, and she has to sort of work through and deal with them. What she has been doing over the last few years, though, she's taken to writing stories for children, which has given her a tremendous amount of pleasure, and she really enjoys doing that. And I think it's the creativity, when people can access their creativity, it really helps with the healing process.
What I wanted to say there too, Sally, is that when My Place was first published, 1987, it was the bicentennial year, was the year after. It seemed like the country was ready to hear the stories that are inside My Place. Mm. I mean, how do you feel about it now?
Well, I think it's been a very rocky road politically since My Place was published. I mean, I think it's absolutely wonderful that the present government has chosen to offer that apology to Aboriginal people, but it was a long time coming. And I suppose the sadness that a lot of us feel over that length of time is that many people have passed away, and people that were looking forward to having that apology never got to hear it. But that's not to devalue the apology that Kevin Rudd has given, because I think he did it very well. It was meaningful. It felt genuine. And I know we all watched it ourselves as a family, and we found it very moving personally.
What really surprised me when I was kind of doing the research ahead of this interview was that how much has been written about My Place and how much has been written about the various issues that it raises for us as a society, but also for Aboriginal people as a community. Where do you find yourself? I mean, you're saying that you feel tired, and you know that certainly it's been a rocky road politically since it was first published. But how do you feel personally about that journey that you've been on with? How do you think you've gone on in the past 21 years? Because there've been some bumps, I guess, along the road to 2008.
Yeah, I think there's always highs and lows, and I think one of the struggles that I've had personally, and the members of my family have, is that we're just very ordinary people, and and we had no expectation of the book doing as well as what it did or attracting all that media attention. We are quite frankly very uncomfortable with so much media attention because we're just such ordinary people. We're just like any other family. And so I think learning to deal with that has been a very difficult challenge for us. Just learning to do, you know, to have a public face to your family is difficult to come to terms with. I think that's one of the things that's been hard. But there's been lots of positives as well. I know when my mum was, healthier than what she is now, she was doing a lot of work in schools with Aboriginal children and with talking about issues and raising awareness and, you know, doing a lot of work in Reconciliation Week and in and in NAIDOC Week and things like that. So, I mean, I think it's opened up a lot of avenues for people to talk about the past and to try and talk about it in an honest and open way, and to perhaps try and come to terms with things in a way that says, well, look, yes, you know, this happened and that happened, and these things shouldn't have happened, and we can never make them right. But by talking about it, coming to terms with it, and trying to find different avenues to heal ourselves, I think we can move forward. So in terms of my own personal journey, in terms of my family's journey, it has been really hard. It has been littered with highs and lows, and I think probably that because of our own family history, it will still be many years before we fully come to terms with what happened to our family. I mean, the research in terms of the content of My Place is ongoing in terms of us reconnecting with our people and our culture and our relatives. You know, since My Place was published, we've discovered that my grandmother had other children that were taken away that we didn't know about, aunties and uncles that we never met and never shared family times with. Some of them we've managed to track down, but they were deceased before we found them. So that's just another layer of grief, I think, that we're trying to come to terms with. And I think there are a lot of families around Australia like that have that ongoing struggle. It's been heartbreaking for my mum because she's a naturally sociable, outgoing kind of person, and one of her greatest tragedies of her life was that she always wanted brothers and sisters and, of course, never had them, and actually grew up thinking that she was an only child. And then to find out, you know, very late in life that she wasn't an only child, and that there was a whole side to my grandmother's life that we never knew about and only found out about, you know, since My Place was published. It's terribly difficult to come to terms with emotionally. And you go through the whole gamut of emotions, like from anger, rage, grief, sadness, confusion, like how could that happen? And then also, I know with me personally, I look back and I think, but my God, what a strong woman my grandmother was. What courage she must have had. How did she manage to survive all of that? And I just stand in awe of her and also of all our, you know, older people with what they've gone through. It just, their strength just amazes me. But I think it also inspires me.
I think, you know, it's if we look at when My Place came out, and you alluded before to, I guess there's been a steady flow of oral history, autobiography by Aboriginal writers, people who just told their own story, and it seems that there has been a real flourishing of oral history since My Place was published.
I think what is true is that we can never have enough stories. Stories are so important to us because they're part of our culture and they're the way that we express our life experiences and come to terms with them. And I think the fact that there has been such a flood of people talking about their personal and family histories and people writing about their own experiences, I think is absolutely fantastic. I mean, I try and read as much as possible in my spare time about what people are writing because I absolutely love to read what other people are saying and I get so much out of it, and it helps me also to understand my own experience and my own family's experience. But I really hope that in the future we see more and more stories come out and that is supported, like, you know, through arts funding and things like that, because I think it's really important.
You've been involved in the editing of this new collection of essays. I mean, I will come back to My Place because I find it an endlessly fascinating subject,
okay.
I have to say. And I guess that's because I too, as an Aboriginal person, have come to a kind of fuller understanding of my family through the records and through finding out where they lived and what kind of lives they had. I mean, you know, our families from a completely different part of the country and had a different experience. But I do find that the story that you tell in My Place of the recovery of identity is a real human thing. It's even though, of course, there's a big, our Aboriginality is so much part of what we're trying to recover. It's also a human story too. And I think, you know, Alice Walker was one of the people who reviewed My Place when it came out, and a lot of other people from different cultures see something in My Place beyond what Aboriginal people see, I think.
I think what's important is our humanity, and I think the bottom line for me is that we are all human. I think what happened with Aboriginal people in Australia is that sometimes we weren't seen. Our humanity wasn't recognised. It wasn't valued. It wasn't accepted. And I know when you go into some of the early documents, like I do quite a bit of archival research here in Western Australia in Batty Library, and when you look at some of the early documents and when you read some of the things that were written about our grandmothers and our old people in our personal family files that the government kept here, it's terribly inhumane. It's not just racist, it's inhumane. And I think that's something that we have suffered from in Australia, the way that we have been so stereotyped and the way that our humanity hasn't been recognised. I think this is one reason why the apology was so important, because we had a national tragedy. We needed a national apology, but what we needed more than anything was for our humanity to be recognised. And I think that's one of the things that the apology did.
This is Away, and you're on ABC Radio National with me, Daniel Browning. I'm with the writer Sally Morgan. Now we'll hear an excerpt from the dramatisation of My Place. The readers are Jetta Cole, Ron Gidjup, Lynette Narkle and Dot Collard.
Before I had Gladdy, I was carrying another child, but I wasn't allowed to keep it. That was the way of it then. They took our children one way or another. I never told anyone I was carrying Gladdy. Now, how all this come about, that's my business. I'll only tell a little. Everyone knew who the father was, but they all pretended they didn't know. They knew, they knew. You didn't talk about those things then. You hid the truth.
When they came to get me, I clung to my mother and I tried to sing them. I wanted them to die, but I was too young. I didn't know how to sing them properly. I cried and I cried, calling to my mother. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. She was my favourite. I loved her. I called. I want to stop with you. I want to stop with you.
One Sunday, my mother visited the home. I could tell she was upset as soon as I saw her. We went for a walk and she told me that Alice had asked her to leave Ivanhoe. She was very hurt. How many years have I been working for that family and they can't afford to keep me? I felt very unsure of myself. I had felt like part of the family and now Mum was no longer going to have anything to do with them. It was well known around Claremont what a good worker my mother was. I think people felt sorry for her, the way she'd been treated. And Mrs. Morgan offered Mum a job as a living housekeeper. It was the first time she'd been out on her own in the world. She'd always told me that she'd been at Ivanhoe forever, that it was her home. The Morgans were good to Mum. She had a nice room and, for the first time in her life, annual holidays. After Mum had been at Morgan's about 2 years, Alice asked her if she could come back to Ivanhoe to work. I wanted her to stay at Morgan's because it was easy for her, but I think Mum still felt a loyalty to the family. It was easy for people to make her feel sorry for them. She was too kind-hearted.
The following day, we decided to go to Corunna Downs Station. When we reached the main house, Trevor, the manager, showed us over the place. To our surprise and delight, it was the same house Nan and Arthur had known in their day. As we were leaving, Doris said, "You know, I got a stone from the old days. It's a bit hollow in the middle. They used it for grinding seeds out in the bush. You think Daisy might like that? She'd know what it was for. You know, it might mean something to her."
"I'd love it myself," replied Mum. "Me too," I chipped in. Doris laughed. "Take it then. It's from the time we don't see around here anymore. You show it to Daisy. It's fitting she should have it."
Nothing was said, but I knew Mum felt like I did, like we'd suddenly come home and now we were leaving again. But we had a sense of place now.
Music. Can we maybe just at that point, Sally, maybe you'd like to read something for me?
Okay, well, I'll read you from Heartsick for Country first.
Yeah, fabulous.
Okay. Okay, the subheading is Of Things to Come. These days, Sydney is the business gateway to Australia and home to the Australian Securities Exchange. It is a major international tourist destination and has a population of over 4 million people, of whom only around 1% are Indigenous. A few kilometres south of the Sydney Central Business District is Botany Bay, which historians still cite as the birthplace of modern Australia. It is vastly different now from the place where James Cook first landed in 1770. The bay has been dredged and its sand dunes mined. The groundwater flowing into the bay has been poisoned by chemicals linked to cancer from heavy industry, and many species of plants and animals native to this area are now extinct or endangered. In the West, the story is no different. In the Pilbara, where the land of my own people lies, we are struggling to protect the plants, animals and water sources and to save the strong and special places. One of the greatest battles we face at present is protecting our ancient rock art from an unthinking and greedy alliance of government and industry. The oldest, largest and richest rock art galleries on the planet, which archaeologists say should be World Heritage listed, are found in the Pilbara. But bit by bit, they are being wiped off the face of the earth by projects which government describes as being in the public good. We all play a part in the world to come, and as the earth casts its shadow to the moon, none of us can truly know how far our great dreams or our crimes will take us. The era we live in now will one day be the past, and the time will come when our actions will be weighed by others who will reflect on our legacy. In the tragedies and joys that unfold beyond our passing, what role will each of us have played? Is there a framework we can use to forge meaningful and just partnerships between the new and the old, between the firstborn peoples of this land and the diversity of peoples who have been born since? What can guide and help us in protecting this most ancient and special place, this multitude of countries that together form the continent now known as Australia? If we look to all of the peoples like mine, then it is clear that country has always been at the heart of every nation ever birthed here. Country makes us, this land makes us, whether we know it or not.
Talia Morgan, thank you for that. I wanted to also pick up on something you kind of touched on earlier, and that is how land is saturated, the earth is saturated with kind of the, you know, the memory of our ancestors, and not just our ancestors, but, you know, all the animals and plants and, you know, the water courses. And it just seems to me so essential that you don't actually mine that land that's saturated with those kind of memories. I mean, I can say that because I'm not a miner, and I'm not engaged in that kind of work. But there are a lot of Aboriginal men who are increasingly being who are finding themselves in those kind of occupations.
Well, that's
particularly
true.
And given the resources boom in WA.
Yes, that's true. And also you have to remember that in regional areas, you know, the unemployment rate for Aboriginal people in regional areas is sometimes up to 90%. I mean, it's incredibly high. There's not many jobs there, and infrastructure for Aboriginal people and also education that is available has always been very substandard. So, you know, people need to work. You need to support your family and you need to earn a living. And you know, that's just a reality. I mean, it's interesting, in Heartsick for Country, one of the Noongar elders, a lady who lives down south here in this southwest part of Western Australia, talks about how in the early days when they were demolishing the forest to make way for farming land, how her family had no choice but to participate in the destruction of the forest because it was the only way their family could survive. And I think that's the catch-22 for us. When you live in poverty, Then how do you care for your family? And when you look at the whole history of the introduction of agriculture into Australia, then you can see what's happened there. I mean, we have the worst record of extinction of mammalian species in the whole world. And our mammals are incredibly unique. There's still a lot that scientists don't know about them. Yet we're still allowing them to become extinct by the way we manage environmental issues and by the power that we give to big business. I think that has to be reevaluated because, you know, what is the Australian nation about? Is that all it's about? Is, you know, does everything have to be economically driven? What are our values as a nation? What are we going to pass on to the young people? What are we going to say is important? I think we need to stand up and say, this is important. This needs to be protected. You know, I want to have this heritage available for my children and grandchildren, you know, 100, 200 years down the track. I don't want to pass on to them a desert.
I'm Daniel Browning, and this is Away, Indigenous Culture on ABC Radio National. Today, I'm with Sally Morgan, who more than 20 years ago wrote My Place, the memoir that's been called an Australian classic. Suffice to say, not everyone agrees. I asked Sally Morgan how she felt when Channel 9's Sunday program aired allegations in 2004 that she'd fabricated certain claims made within My Place about her white pastoralist grandfather, Alfred Howden Drake Brockman. The Drake Brockman family has denied Morgan's claim that he committed incest with his daughter, her grandmother Daisy, who worked as a domestic in the Drake Brockman household. Judith Drake Brockman has even published a rejoinder disputing Morgan's claims.
I think probably what it does more than anything, I mean, aside from the stress side, it was extremely stressful time for my mother, and because she's much older now, you know, concerns about her health, like she has high blood pressure and things like that. So we were very concerned at the time. It didn't come out of nowhere in the sense that I think that dispute will be ongoing. So there was a historical context to it in that from when My Place was first published that there was always that ongoing dispute and, you know, it's always been bubbling away there in the background and that was probably just, you know, the latest in a long line of different ways to discredit what had been written. So it wasn't a surprise to us in that sense. I think probably what was surprising to us was that we felt it was a pretty unbalanced kind of approach and that it actually had an agenda, which was a discrediting agenda. I don't think, I mean, it wasn't the first incident. I would be highly surprised if it was the last. And I think it comes back to that essential conflict we have in Australian society. What is the place of Indigenous people in this Australian nation? You know, what is the history? How do we bring the two histories together? How do we come to terms with each other? And I think that's what that particular incident, if you put it within a bigger national context, I think that's what it's about. And that is what we all have to resolve as Australians going into the future. And I think one of the problems that we have is Aboriginal people come from a very different worldview. You know, like if you look at Western knowledge, you know, it compartmentalises everything. So you have the disciplines like you have history and, you know, English and all that kind of stuff. We come from a worldview where we see everything is connected. So we don't compartmentalise knowledge. So when we look at, history and we talk about history, we think about it in a different way. And I think we think about it probably more in the context of a story. The other thing is the over-reliance on printed sources in Western knowledge systems. Like, I mean, you know, if for example, if I look at my family's personal file that we accessed, there's a lot of errors in that file. And I know that other people have found an enormous number of errors in their own files, you know, factual errors. But we, you know, if it's a printed document, it tends to be given more validation or weight than oral testimony. And I think that's probably also an ongoing debate amongst Australian historians as well, because you only have to look at the history wars to see, you know, what's going there. But I think you're always, you know, whenever it's to do with Aboriginal people and our place in the Australian nation, then I think you have to always look at what the deeper issue might be, because sometimes things manifest in a way that you think, oh, that's the issue, but when you look deeper, you think, oh, no, hang on a minute, you know, I've been here before. What is really going on here is this. What people are really saying is this. What someone is really attacking or trying to undermine is this. And I think in general, perhaps what there is a lack of understanding of is how, as Aboriginal people, we see the world, what our philosophy is, what our spirituality is, what our understanding of the world and the universe is. And I think that's something that I think we've got a long way to go before people start coming to grips with that different worldview.
Now, getting back to my place, and I should remind our listeners, it's the 21st, there's going to be a 21st anniversary edition of My Place published this year. I'm with the author of My Place, Sally Morgan. Sally, at that point I might ask you to read something from My Place. I mean, these words must be reverberating around your head. 21 years down the track, you're still being asked to read from My Place, but there must be a particular passage that, you know, that is really evocative for you.
I thought I'd pick something that was a little bit humorous. The reason I wanted to pick something a little bit humorous is because our old people just have a fabulous sense of humour. And I think the one thing you learn as an Aboriginal person is not to take yourself too seriously, because as soon as you start to do that, someone is going to come along and cut the ground out from underneath you. And our old people are absolutely wonderful at doing that. And my grandmother, I mean, one of the things I think that helped her to survive her life was her sense of humour. And I've met so many older people like that where it's their sense of humour that's got them through. They teach us to be able to laugh at things that perhaps would destroy us otherwise. So I think that sense of humour is so important. So I've just picked out this passage here, which I'll read. On the 14th of February 1966... Australia's currency changed from pounds, shillings and pence to dollars and cents. According to Mum and Nan, it was a step backwards in our history. There's no money like the old money, Nan maintained, and Mum agreed. They had both been shocked when they heard that our new money would not have as much silver in it as the old 2 shilling, 1 shilling, sixpence and threepence. They influenced my views to such an extent that when we were given a free choice for our creative writing essay at school, I wrote a long paper on how the country was going to rack and ruin because we were changing our money. "It'll go bad, Glad," said Nan one night. "You wait and see. You can't make money like that. It'll turn green." Then I noticed that Nan had a jar on the shelf in the kitchen with a handful of 2 shilling pieces in it. Towards the end of the week, the jar was overflowing with sixpences, threepences, 1 shilling and 2 shilling pieces. I could contain my curiosity no longer. "What are you saving up for, Nan?" "Nothing. Don't you touch any of that money." I cornered Mum in the bath. "Okay, Mum, why is Nan hoarding all that money? You're supposed to hand it back to the bank and get new money. Don't you say anything to anyone about that money, Sally." "Why not? Look, that money's going to be valuable one day We're saving it for you kids. When it's worth a lot, we'll sell it, and you kids can have what we make. You might need it by then. I went back into the kitchen and said to Nan, Mum told me what you're up to. I think it's crazy. We don't care what you think. You'll be glad of it in a few years' time. Now you listen. If anyone from the government comes around asking for money, you tell them we gave all ours to the bank. If they pester you about the old money, you just say you don't know nothing. You tell them we haven't got money like that in this house. Nan, I half laughed. No one from the government is going to come round and do that. Oh, don't you believe it. You don't know what the government's like. You're too young. You'll find out one day what they can do to people. You never trust anybody who works for the government. You don't know what they say behind your back. You mark my words, Sally. I was often puzzled by the way Mum and Nan approached anyone in authority. It was as if they were frightened. I knew that couldn't be the reason. Why on earth would anyone be frightened of the government?
Indeed. I mean, that is such an embedded, embodied feeling, that fear of authority. It's almost it's almost genetic.
And I think we pass it on. You know, like, I mean, I look at my own children, I think, I mean, I think the effect that it affects people differently depending on your personality and experiences, I think. But I think probably what it did with me was make me quite rebellious. So you know, I will go to a meeting and I will question things. Like, I won't just accept that, well, that's how it is because, you know, that's what the authority figure is saying. And I see that in my own children as well. And I think it comes out in our humour as well when we look at authority figures in Australian society, particularly people that make pronouncements on Aboriginal issues. I think, you know, our sense of humour taps into all of that.
Then how did Sally Morgan, the author of My Place, get to this place, which is you know, where you are now, and I guess becoming a kind of a warrior for the environment and for, you know, for the protection of rock art in the Pilbara? Mm-hmm. How did you get from 1987 to 2008?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't think there's any credit due to me. I actually think the credit is due to the old people that have influenced me on my journey, if you like. I've been very, very privileged to be able to have conversations and relationships with a lot of older Aboriginal people, and most of these people have passed on now. But the things that they taught me, the understanding that they gave me, the laughter, the humour, even when we were talking about, you know, terribly difficult things like massacres and things like that, just totally inspired me. And also I think the love that they shared with me of country, you know, the love of the land, of the plants and the animals, their ongoing concern. I remember my grandfather telling me how, obviously there's a lot of mining in the Pilbara, and this particular waterhole, which was a freshwater spring in a semi-arid area, was bulldozed. And how he remembered the old people crying and crying because they had filled in the freshwater spring. But there was a spirit snake that lived in there, a rainbow serpent that lived in that spring, and the old people were crying for the snake because of the damage that had been done. And I think that's probably one of the essential differences between how Aboriginal and many non-Aboriginal people see the land, is we don't just see it as it's not just a physical entity for us. There's a whole pile of other things attached to it. There's a spiritual world, there's dreaming ancestors, there's all these other things, and they're things that we relate to in a personal way, on a personal level. So when we see damage like that being done to the environment, it is deeply upsetting for us. At the moment in the Pilbara, we have, well, Western Australia in many ways I'd probably describe as frontier land when it comes to big business. Government here is strongly influenced by big business, particularly by mining companies. And in the Pilbara, we have the oldest rock art in the world, the oldest, the richest, the largest rock art galleries in the world, and they're being destroyed. They're being destroyed by industry, by railway lines, mining for iron ore. The level of exploration that's going on in the Pilbara at the moment is absolutely unprecedented. We have a very weak state Aboriginal Heritage Act where the minister has the power of veto. So even if our claim is upheld against a company, it can be overruled. So the terrible struggle to protect what is left, you know, to protect the balance, the fragile balance of animal and plant life and water sources in a semi-arid area, and then to protect the rock art when it's in an area that's rich in iron ore and you've got BHP and Rio Tinto and FMG and all these other companies wanting to go in there and explore and mine. It's a terrible struggle for us. And then also when you look at that area and you look at the levels of employment, the state of housing and education for Aboriginal people in the area, so many people live in poverty. So many people struggle just to make a living to bring up their children. So, you know, the mining industry in the Pilbara has not delivered what it should have done in terms of A, protecting world heritage areas, and B, in giving back to the people, creating infrastructure and employment in communities. And that's going to be an absolute ongoing struggle for us in the years to come. And obviously I'm going to be involved in that in my family and all the other families as well. But it is terribly, terribly difficult to manage.
I mean, we often hear about the resources boom and the kind of effect that it has in the economy. I guess what's happening in the Pilbara to those ancient rock art galleries and God knows what other sites of archaeological significance beyond just the rock art. That's the counterpoint, I guess, to that whole resources boom that we constantly hear about.
Look, I think money's overrated. I mean, it's easy to say that when you've got a job. But in terms of, I think there are other ways to do things. I don't think industry is creative enough. And I think the vision that our particular state government, as well as businesses here, have is very short term. It's, you know, I mean, particularly with our iron ore at the moment, it's limited to getting as much as they can out of the Chinese market. But my concern is this: what are you leaving behind for future generations? I mean, I don't think that the government appreciates that we have the oldest, richest and largest rock art galleries in the world. If we were bulldozing Stonehenge, if we were trying to put a railway line through St Paul's Cathedral, there would be a world outcry. Yet that is the equivalent of what is happening here in the Pilbara. And I just can't believe that a government can be so short-sighted as to not realise how important it is to protect that heritage for future generations, not just for Aboriginal people, but for all Australians. And I think this comes back to the recognition of our humanity. These are the oldest carvings made by human beings in the world, and we are allowing them to be destroyed. Why is that happening? Why is that happening in this country? And that comes back to how we see our humanity. I remember having a conversation once with another Aboriginal person who also works in a university, and we were talking about this idea of what it means to be a human being. And she said, yes, but we understand our humanity differently. When we speak about being human, we embrace the animals, we embrace the plants, we embrace our environment. We are not human in a vacuum. And I think that's what we need to embrace more as Australians. We need to embrace this land so that it can embrace us, and we need to protect it and care for it and care for these special places. There are special places like this all over Australia. I mean, when I was in Sydney, you know, the rock art in Sydney as well, and I know over there there's a beautiful carving of a fish that someone's built a garage over, and you can lift up the planks on the in the garage floor, and underneath is this beautiful rock carving. When I first read about that, I just cried and cried because I thought that was so sad, and I thought that was so symbolic of what's happened here. And my reaction to hearing about that fish was thinking, well, how can it breathe when it's got a garage built on top of it? You know, and how, where is its people, and how does its people feel about that? When we go out bush here in the Pilbara in our own country, and we see the grinding patches in the granite where the old women used to grind the spinifex seeds to make damper, and we see the carvings and everything, we feel the presence of our old people there. When we sit down and we eat our sandwich in the bush and sit down on the granite near these special places, we can feel them around us. We know those places have to be protected. They're powerful places, they're ancient places. But we also feel the sadness that you know, that we might not have them for much longer, that they might be gone. Because that's our history. We never had libraries, we never had books. Our old people were our memories and our land. We see our history in our land. We see the story of creation, and we see that ongoing creation, and we want to keep that there for our children and for other people as well. But that's what we're losing. No one would go in and hear and blow up a library. You'd be horrified. They'd be arrested and put in jail. But that's what we're losing. We're losing our most ancient libraries in the Pilbara, and there seems to be very little that we can do about it.
The writer, artist and academic, Sally Morgan. The anthology Heartsick for Country is published by Fremantle Press, as is the 21st anniversary edition of My Place. The dramatisation of My Place was released by ABC Audio. That's all we have time for. Don't forget that if you miss the program live on air, you can download it as an MP3, save it to your computer or your mobile device, and listen back whenever and wherever you like. Check our website for more details. That's abc.net.au/rn/away. And that's AWAYE. Away is back next Saturday evening at 6 and on Monday afternoon at 3. I hope you have a great week, but for now, it's goodbye from me.